God, the beneficent, the merciful, the creator and the sustainer of the universe, I greet you with the greetings of all the prophets from Adam to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be upon you. Today we begin the second program in our new series on Muslim beliefs. And in today's program we'll deal with the topic of unseen creatures. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. I have a guest on the Islam in Focus program, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Welcome to Islam in Focus, Brother Jamal.
Welcome to you.
Last week we had a very interesting, at least interesting for me, program on angels. For the benefit of our viewers who may not have seen our program last week, could you just summarize for their benefit some of the points we touched on in dealing with the Islamic belief in angels?
Okay, as we mentioned last time, one of the fundamental articles of faith in Islam that the Quran speaks about is to believe in the angels of God. And he said that those angels are creatures which are not seen by us. We mentioned that those creatures were created from light. We don't know exactly what's the nature of light. That's what the Quran, what the Prophet of Islam has indicated. But he said, however, that the fact that they are created from light signifies the fact that not only that they are non-material, they are not in material form, even though they may appear in physical form, but also signifies that they are totally pure and absolutely sinless creatures. We mentioned also that the position or the status of human beings could be higher than theirs of angels. In fact, we quoted the Quran where angels were commanded by God to bow down to the first creature, the first human, Adam.
Yes.
And we indicated from that since angels are pure by their natures, they don't have a free will, then they are good despite of themselves. Whereas a righteous human being could be better than angels because he has the temptation, he has the evil inclination within himself, and he's got to struggle against those evil forces, and as such he could be in a higher status than those of angels. We also indicated that in terms of the functions of angels, that their basic and most important historical role was to bring revelation to different prophets throughout history, a function which ended with the mission of the last prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the revelation of the last holy book or scripture, the Quran. But despite of that, we also indicated that angels still do relate to our daily life, to the rank and file, you and me and everybody else. And we said that God has assigned angels to keep track of our deeds. They record our deeds, good or bad, which would be part of our account in the Day of Judgment. That they are also particularly interested in keeping company of the pious when they supplicate, pray, or recite the scripture, recite the Quran, for example. They like to listen to them. They enjoy that. We indicated that also angels do provide support and help for believers at the time of adversity and difficulty. In fact, they are constantly praying for the welfare of the believers. And above all, they constantly encourage us and prompt us or inspire us to do good things that would be pleasing to God. And finally, we ended by saying that the practical implication of belief in angels is that when we feel the company of those pure, sinless creatures, it is an encouragement to us to do good. It reminds us of our duty and awaken our moral consciousness.
Okay, well now that's a good summary of the Muslim belief in, as regards angels. What about the question of other unseen creatures? Do Muslims also believe that there are other unseen creatures besides angels?
Oh yes, no doubt about that. I got the chart here that perhaps summarizes the answer to that question. First of all, when we talk about God's creatures, perhaps you can classify these into two main groups, the seen and the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, the creatures that are seen can be classified also into two major groups. The humans and others. By others, mean animals, animate, inanimate objects. The humans, which of course the most important creature of God according to the Quran, can be divided into two basic groups. Believers and unbelievers. I just use an abbreviation here. Believers and unbelievers. That's as far as the seen creatures are concerned. Now, for the unseen creatures, there are, again, two basic groups that the Quran speaks about. One is the angel, the angels as a category, and this is the subject that we have covered in the first program of this new series. The second, which is today's topic, are the jinn, J-I-N-N. I know some people might wonder what the word jinn means. Is there any equivalent in English? To my understanding, there is no single word in English that would give the proper and complete meaning of jinn as understood by Muslims, except to say that they are unseen creatures. However, to get it closer to the minds and the words that are common in English, we can subdivide also jinn into two main groups. Believers and unbelievers. That's again an abbreviation. Now, believing jinn would be just as good as angels, in a sense. Or as good as, let's say, believers who are humans. In that sense, we can make an analogy between believing jinn and believing human beings. The unbelieving jinn, however, are the ones that we usually refer to as Satans, and also a term that appears in the Quran about the first of those unbelieving jinn, Iblis. Iblis, that appears in the Quran. But that's the equivalent of Satan. The word Satan also is used in the Quran in the Arabic equivalent, Shaitan. As-Shaitan. When you use Satan, capital S, or Iblis, you're talking particularly about the first of those Satans, the one who tempted Adam and Eve in paradise. Now, the legion of Satan, his descendants and his helpers until today, are called sometimes Satans, plural, or devils. Here there is a dotted line under unbelieving humans. And the reason being is that the word Satan, not the Satan, just the word Satan in Arabic, means anyone who is rebellious against God. And as you know, there are human beings also who are rebellious against God. And as such, literally speaking in Arabic, shaitan or satans or devils are rebellious creatures, whether they are of the unseen world like jinn or whether they are of the among the human beings. So that perhaps, I hope, would clarify some of the confusion that sometimes arises with respect to the terms used. But what really jinn means, it means both believing and unbelieving spirits, good and evil spirits, both.
Let's spend just a little bit more time on the jinn. I know that this is probably a term that's not that familiar to a lot of the viewers of the program. Perhaps it would be helpful if you could talk a bit about more about the nature of jinn and what they are created from. We learned last time that angels were created from light. What about the jinn?
Okay. Jinn are created from smokeless fire, according to the Quran. That particularly appears in chapter 15, verses 26 and 27. We don't know, of course, when you talk about smokeless fire, nobody knows what is the exact nature of that fire, just as we don't know, again, what is the exact nature of light of which angels are created. But, of course, it signifies the fact that they are non-material, basically, that they have capacities and abilities which far exceeds those given to the human in terms of the speed of their movement, just like angels also do. In fact, the Quran indicates that like human beings, the jinn, both believing and unbelieving, have a free choice. They have a free will. They can choose to obey God or to rebel against him. And in that sense, they would be similar to the human beings, except that they are non-material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we conclude from this then that because they have the freedom of choice, that mm-hmm. the jinns are not all necessarily evil spirits, as some people might think?
Right. That's correct. Absolutely. Because, in fact, like you said, if they had the free will, then some of them turn out to be good, some might turn to be evil. So jinn are not evil by definition. It's what they make of themselves. In fact, you'll find that in one verse in the Quran, for example, in chapter 6, verse 130, it talks there about even those jinn receiving messengers coming to them to guide them, just as human beings also receive prophets to guide them into the straight path. So yes, you're absolutely right in this, that they are not necessarily all evil. Maybe if I quote you a couple of, or at least one quotation from the Quran might clarify the issue. In chapter 46, verses 29 through 32, it reads, "Behold, we turn towards thee," that is thee, O Muhammad, "a company of jinn, quietly listening to the Quran. When they stood in the presence of, they said, 'Listen in silence.' When the reading was finished, they returned to their people to warn them of their sins. They said, 'Our people, we have heard a book revealed after Moses,'" which means that they were aware also of previous scriptures revealed to different prophets. "We have heard a book revealed after Moses confirming what came before it. It guides mankind to the truth and to the straight path. O our people, hearken to the one who invites you to God and believe in him. He will forgive you your faults and deliver you from a grievous penalty. If any does not hearken to the one who invites us to God, he cannot frustrate God's plan on earth, and no protectors can he have beside God. Such humans wander in manifest error." So in that sense, then, we can say that they are just like humans in a sense of being warned and urged to use their free will in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a bit last time as well about the effect or how angels relate to us in our daily life.
Mm-hmm.
What about the question of Satan? How does he relate to our daily life?
He does relate to our lives in the opposite way. Relate to our life. The angels, as we said last time, are like forces of good. They are the pure, sinless spirits
mm-hmm.
that are enticing us, encouraging us
mm-hmm.
To do what is good and to avoid what is evil. The Satan relates to our life in a sense that he is doing the opposite job. He's trying to destroy what the angels are urging us to do. He's constantly urging us to commit evil, to do sin, to violate the teachings of God. In that sense, then, we can say that the unbelieving jinn, or Satans, are relevant to our life, not only as individuals, it's relevant to the life of the entire history of human beings. If you look into the history of human beings, you find that the basic struggle by individuals and groups, nations, civilizations, has constantly been this countervailing power or forces, the forces of good and forces of evil, which one predominate at a given point of time.
Mm-hmm.
All the ups and downs in human history, all the achievements, good achievements, as well as cruelty, all the good acts and the evil acts for individuals, on the level of the individuals, levels of the groups, are all related, again, to which of these forces get the upper hand at one time or the other. The Quran makes it clear, for example, in chapter 7, verses 20 through 21, that from the very beginning, even after the creation of Adam and Eve, the Satan, the big Satan, capital S, played a major role to try to dissuade them from obeying God, try to tempt them into disobeying God. But even when mankind came on earth, and as we said before in a different program, we don't live on earth here as punishment for that sin, because there is no concept of original sin in Islam, but
right.
simply it was a lesson for Adam and Eve before coming to the earth where they were destined to live. Satan did not stop, but Satan, as well as his legions from among humans and unseen creatures, keep always pushing and imploring humans to destroy themselves and to commit all kinds of acts. We find examples of that, for example, in chapter 2 in the Quran, verse 268, in chapter 8, verse 18, chapter 16, verse 63. Maybe if I just pick one, if I may, that might give you some kind of indication about the role that Satan played. The first quotation is in chapter 2, verse 268. It says, the evil one, which literally, as it appears in Arabic, as-shaytan, Satan, mm-hmm. the evil one or Satan, threatens you with poverty. That is, whenever you want to do some act of charity, he says, all right, don't do it because you might get poor.
Yes.
And continues, and bids you to conduct unseemly. God promises you his forgiveness and bounties, and God cares for all, and he has knowledge of all things. So there is a clear warning to us here that the role played by Satan is very dangerous, and we have really to beware and to take all kinds of precautions against his evil prompting.
Well, given the evil nature of Shaitan or Satan, and the fact that we're warned in the Quran to be careful, are there any directions or any references in the Quran that we can turn to show us how we might be able to be successful, or what precautions we can take to protect ourselves, isolate ourselves, or insulate, I guess would be a better word, insulate ourselves mm-hmm. against the evil of Shaitan or Shaitans?
Okay. I think the first thing that we have to keep in mind is we have to realize that he's our enemy. He and his associates and legions are our enemy. One should know his friends from his enemies from the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's why you find the Quran puts it very clearly. إِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ لَكُمْ عَدُوٌ. Satan is indeed your enemy. So take him for an enemy. That appears, for example, in chapter 35, verse 16. This kind of enmity has been expressed, quoting Shaitan, for example, as it appears in the Quran in chapter 7, verse 16, and chapter 4, verse 117, that after he was cast out of paradise, he was quoted as saying that, all right, now I'll stand on the way of those people, on the way of humans, of perfecting themselves. I try always to dissuade them. I try to order them, whatever is evil. So he has already undertook on himself to dissuade humans from following the path of God. That's why the Quran makes it clear to us. It makes a warning, in fact, to us, that we should not obey him. Not only take him for friend, but we should not really obey or listen to him. One quotation, for example, in chapter 7, verse 27, it says, O you, children of Adam, directing that to all humanity, let not Satan seduce you in the same manner as he got your parents out of the garden, stripping them of their raiment to expose their shame. For he and his tribe watch you from a position where you cannot see them. We made the evil ones or Satan's friends only to those without faith. So this is the first thing that one can keep in mind by way of precaution. The second thing is that it's not only that we should take this precaution, but we should be aware of all the tricks and deceptions played by Satan or Satans. Seldom Satan comes to one and says, all right, this is an evil thing, do it, do the evil thing, do the bad thing. He doesn't present it as good. He always tries to present it in a way that looks attractive and somehow seductive to attract the human to do it. This is why we find in some verses in the Quran, for example, in chapter 6, verse 142, and 24, verse 21, we find that there is a constant reminder to us not to follow خطوات الشيطان, or the steps of Satan, which means that he tries to draw us a bit by bit, not to tell us that this is something bad, but to draw us in a gradual and sneaky manner. In addition to these two precautions, the other thing that the Quran also implores us to understand is to know that obedience to Satan at the expense of obedience to God is tantamount to actually worshipping Satan. I'm not talking about worship in a ritual sense. Mm-hmm. Of course, I heard, for example, recently about the so-called Church of Satan in Toronto, and there are other places where there's actually rites to worship Satan. But in the broad Islamic meaning of worship, worship does not just mean ritual, but obedience and mm-hmm. submission. Satan is an act, actually, amount of worship of Satan. One of the very interesting quotations I find in the Quran about this Satan worship in a variety of forms is in chapter 36, verses 59 through 62. And the creed, did I, that means God, did I not enjoin on you, children of Adam, that you should not worship Satan, for he was to you an avowed enemy, and that you should worship me, that's worship God, for that this was the straight way. But he did lead astray a great multitude of you. Did you not then understand? This is the hell, or the hellfire, of which you were repeatedly warned. Embrace you the fire this day, that's the day, in the day of judgment,
yes.
For you persistently rejected truth. So obedience to Satan is tantamount to rejection of the truth. These are some of the main precautions that the Quran provides for us as humans as to how we can resist those evil promptings.
What about the power of Satan, the Satan, or Satan,
plural,
and all of the other Satan and all of the other Satans that work along with him? Do they? Is it fair to say that then they have no authority over us? That we're not compelled to follow them? They can't force us to do things against our will?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I had time, I could have quoted this in the Quran, for example, in chapter 91, in verse 7 and 8, it says, وَنَفْسٍ وَمَا سَوَّاهَا فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا, that God has created the human being in the most perfect and complete form, and it adds, and he inspired into the human, man or woman, the knowledge of guidance and the knowledge of the wrong path. In other words, without even being guided by prophets or scriptures, each human being has the potential for belief or not belief, for good and evil. And in that sense, then, we could say that Satan would have only power and authority over those who obey him, over those who give him the opportunity to dominate on them. Let me put it this way. Just like saying, if we are capable as humans to disregard the commands of God, disobey him, and obey Satan, we are for sure as capable of disobeying Satan and following the path of God by full obedience and submission to him, which is the meaning of the word Islam. Now, the Quran says that we should not have any notion, for example, that, I could not do good because the devil made me do it. Like some students, for example, don't answer properly and they write for me at the end of the page,
yeah.
Oh, Satan made me do it. No, Satan didn't make you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You let him
yeah.
cause you to do it. Let me quote from the Quran, for example, in chapter 16, verses 98 through 100. It says, when you do read the Quran, seek God's protection from Satan, the rejected one. And then notice this. No authority has he over those who believe and put their trust in their Lord. Believe and put your trust in God, Satan will have no authority. No. The last verse, number 100, it says, his authority is over those only who take him as patron and those who join partners with God in worship or in obedience. So in that sense then, it's up to us whether we should give him this authority or not. In fact, there is a verse in the Quran in chapter 72, verse 6, which indicates that in the past, some of the humans who used to think that Satan have tremendous powers and they tried to go to devils or evoke their help or support for them, that those devils only increased their folly, as the Quran puts it, that they started dominating them more and making them more dependent on them. That might relate to another issue that perhaps you can come to in the next series or something, like the whole issue of magic and sorcery, evil spirit and spells and all that sort of thing. But finally, I'd like to add one more thing, that even in case we make a mistake, in case we sin, we disobey God or follow the steps of Satan, as the Quran puts it, still we should not throw our hands in the air and say, all right, you know, there's no hope. The Quran says that we have always to keep remembering God and try to correct ourselves. Even the first mistake by Adam and Eve, according to the Quran, was forgiven already, and that's why there is no original sin.
Mm-hmm.
The Quran, for example, in chapter 3, verse 37, in chapter 20, verses 120 and 121, indicate that Adam and Eve, both of them repented for God, and their repentance was accepted. So whenever we fall, we have to remember again that we should not be more dominated and give up any hope of ridding ourselves from the control of these evil forces.
So there's no defense in Islam. You can't say the devil made me do it.
No.
Okay, I'd like
to encourage you to do it, but he didn't make you do it.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to have you comment for a minute on some of the conditions that we may create, or there may exist, though, that provide more opportunity for Satan to exercise some kind of influence or control over our life. Could you comment a bit on those? On
sure, sure. The first thing, of course, is disbelieving God. The lack of belief in God, the rejection of his existence, rejection of his divine attributes, unthankful attitude and disgraceful attitude towards his bounties and blessing that he has endowed the humans in all forms, which are uncountable. It's just beyond any count. This is one way of really getting the domination of Satan. You find reference to that, for example, in the Quran in chapter 19, the chapter on Mary, called Mary, verse 83. Mm-hmm. There is a similar statement also in chapter 59, verse 16, that disbelief in God is one way of making friends with Satan. The second thing that one keep in mind, or should keep in mind, is that by having close friendship with those on whom there is God's wrath, people who are really disobeying God and challenging his authority, is one way also of having Satan getting more influence on us. That appears, for example, in chapter 58, particularly in verse 19 on. And this, of course, is a reference to the bad influence that we get when we get too close to people who are ungodly in their attitudes. The third thing that the Quran reminds us of is to forget God, not to remember him. In fact, and nowadays, it seems that people have time for every conceivable type of activity but to remember God and follow his path. For example, in chapter 43, verse 36, it says, if anyone withdraws himself from remembrance of God most gracious, we appoint for him an evil one, or Satan, to be an intimate companion of him. Such evil ones really hinder them from the path, but they think that they are being guided. So this is one of the things that we have to keep in mind. And finally, the Quran itself provides a blueprint as to how to respond to this kind of prompting, that we should always remember God. Again, for shortness time, I'll just give you the number of verses in chapter 7, verse 201, and in chapters 23, verse 98, which implore us that whenever we feel there is any evil prompting, we should seek refuge in God and remember him, and that would be enough to rid ourselves from those pressures, if we have the determination to do it.
Okay, Brother Jamal, in the minute or so that we have left on the program, I think a question, I'd like to get your response to a question I'm sure a lot of people must have in their minds. Why were jinn created in the first place?
Just like the creation of angels also. As human beings, we are both material and spirit. Mm-hmm. We have the capability to be good or bad. The angels are doing their jobs. They are prompting us towards good. Without the jinn, without Satan's or evil creatures in particular, not all jinns, without evil creatures or evil jinn, we would not be tested. We would not really have had any challenge. If we are always prompted to do good, there is no challenge. There is no fun in life. Ultimately, our decision as human beings to use this God-given freedom of choice and God-given spirituality to overcome those evil prompting and follow the right path.
Well, Brother Jamal, we've exhausted the time available for our program today. I want to thank you for being our guest and talking about this most interesting subject. I want to thank you, the viewers of the Islam in Focus program, for watching. That's our program. See you next time. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you.
Allahu Akbar.